Welcome to Vinyl Verdict. I'm Bell.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Ploof.
And this week, it's REO Speedwagon. And right off the bat, Jamie, this is your pick. What does that mean? What's REO Speedwagon?
REO Speedwagon was the name of a motor car company.
What's a motor car?
Well, they made... So, REO Speedwagon was the successor company to Oldsmobile.
So what's an Oldsmobile?
When Oldsmobile got bought by General Motors, Ransom E. Olds, the guy who started started another company called REO, and one of their cars was the Speedwagon.
Wow. Why did they just name their band a car?
Because it sounds cool.
It's like let's start a band just called Ford Fiesta,
Mustang.
I don't know
Kia Stingray.
So I'm not too terribly passionate about this album. Ooh. I like it because it has a couple of recognizable hits on it.
And it's got a really cool album cover that was like...
Yeah, controversial.
Very controversial, even for the time.
Yeah, and this is an interesting one. So this is their breakout album, but this is their sixth album.
Yeah, they formed in like 68 or something.
Good
yeah.
for them for keeping to it.
So the problem with REO Speedwagon, in my opinion, is that they're the most also-ran of all the like the 70s and 80s bands.
Yeah.
Like
they're what? They're also like, ran? What does that mean?
They're like, it's like,
and
okay, you got...
also REO.
Yeah, you got, like, you've got ZZ Top, you got, I don't know, what's another? ELO, you got another, like, another band, and it's just like, and REO Speedwagon. It's like the one that you don't think about. Mm. But this is their breakout album. This album's gone 10 times platinum. It's sold over 11 million copies.
Yeah.
The two of the songs were played on the first day of MTV. In 1981, this album sold more copies than any other album in 1981.
I believe it. It's a good album.
You liked it.
I did.
I think this album is just okay.
It's a good album.
I think it's so middle of the road.
No, yeah. It's good.
What?
It's quite good, I would say.
I will never understand. I will never understand, Jamie.
I was ready to not defend this album when Bell
100%.
Rips it apart.
I thought for
this
sure.
This album is fine.
Yeah.
No,
I enjoy it.
You just picked the wrong season to choose it because it's a very summery album.
Man, I thought you were going to rip it apart.
No, it's good.
There's some tracks that are really good. Don't get me wrong. It's got like two or three like
I'd
really
say a lot
good
of them.
Hit singles. What the
okay,
hell?
Okay, I wouldn't say a lot of them, but I would say there's a good chunk of decent songs on here. And even the ones that aren't good, I'm like, this is still good.
It's just like typical late 70s, early 80s. Like,
well, I haven't listened to that.
Or, oh my God.
Okay, right? So anyway, let me give you a little background.
Maybe that's why, because we've listened to like so much. Just
so this album came out
rock.
The same year as Eliminator.
Yeah, way better album.
No.
But anyway, REO Speedwagon, is Kevin Cronin. He's the vocalist and the rhythm guitar. He's the vocalist on every track except track 9. And then Bruce Hall, he's the bass player. He sings on track 9.
Of Hall and Oates?
No, that's a different guy. No, Hall and Oates is
I'm
one
kidding.
Guy. His first name is Holland.
No, it's Daryl Hall. Who's Oates? Michael Oates?
John Oates,
yeah.
Yeah. Gary Richrath is the lead guitarist. Neil Dowdy is the keyboardist. And our friend Alan Gratzer is our drummer.
Wow.
That's REO Speedwagon.
Hey.
They have an album two before this called You Can Tune a Piano, But You Can't Tune a Fish.
Yeah, they do.
And it's got a picture of a tuna with a tuning fork coming out of it. It's a great album.
They were real inventive.
Prior to this, their highest chart-topping hit was a song called Riding the Storm Out. It's really good.
Sure.
That came out in like 1976. And I think it went to number 58.
Wait, Riders on the Storm?
No, Riding. Oh, God, no. That's a Doors song.
I know.
But anyway.
I like this album. I don't plan on listening to anything else by them.
Yeah, that's a good
that's
a good bet.
That's good
that's
because
good
they
bet.
Didn't have another hit until two albums from now.
Yeah.
That's
a good
yeah,
bet.
Yeah, don't.
That's
don't. This is a good starting and ending place for REO Speedwagon. I own six of their albums because I bought them from the auction, and they all came in like one of those like large lots where it's like the same group.
Yeah. Mm.
So I own just about every one of their albums. I think they have like 9 albums in total, and I have 6 of them. I think they're just okay. But I appreciate them for existing because they give us a couple of very good driving rock ballads. They're on this album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mostly know them from, like, this album. The cover is very...
Yeah.
That's what got you into it so many years ago?
100%, yeah. My dad
owned
it. Better
than a Sears catalog.
Yeah, better than a Sears catalog. Dinner alone. But no, it's got a couple big hits on it, and it's also got, I also just know REO from Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
That's what I know too.
Yeah, Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
Carl loves REO. You know, something badass. Like REO Speedwagons. Like, yeah.
I believe they're on the Vice City soundtrack. I believe Keep On Loving You is on the Vice City soundtrack.
Yeah, probably. And I always forget that they did Take It On The Run, which is a fantastic song.
You're taking on the run.
Yeah.
Take It On The Run's a great song.
It's so good. And I always forget that it's them.
I heard a Me First in the Gimme Gimme's album.
Oh, yeah.
And they cover Take It On The Run in a punk style. And it slaps.
That's
in
probably
both versions.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll play that album one day.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I'm not crazy about REO. I've never downloaded their discography as a teenager. I've never bought an album by them.
Tickets to their shows are reasonable.
Yeah, they toured like 2 years ago.
They're currently touring.
They're currently touring. Nice.
And tickets, most expensive tickets to their $60. Shows right now, $31.
No way.
That's a great deal.
What kind of venues are they playing? Just like bars?
Like the P&E.
Okay, yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
So like a couple years ago, I saw Chicago with former guest Alex Clark, and they played at the P&E, and I think the tickets were like $45.
Yeah.
And that was a good show.
Yeah.
And a band of a similar era.
Yeah.
REO Speedwagon.
Yeah.
I would also pay, you know,
$40.
$40.
Yeah, see sure. REO.
See them in an open-air stadium. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep On Loving You.
Bell,
something like that.
Please, more thoughts. And then we'll get into it.
Like I said, I was upset that you chose this in the cold season. I wanted to put my windows down and drive to this because it's a great... It's really fun.
I'm befuddled.
It's really fun.
I'm so
me too.
I'm so befuddled.
For me, it's all like heartbreak love ballad songs. I would.
These are the most middle of the road.
Yeah, they're not even the best ones.
Songs.
I'd rather
yeah.
listen to like Poison or I don't know, even just Sting and the Police and stuff. I don't know.
I'll pick a Police song one day.
Yeah.
Roxanne.
No, yeah. I'm not gonna pick that one.
You don't have to put on the red light.
Roxanne.
Okay, what about Roxanne? But it just rocks.
Rocks.
And maybe, Roxanne. Like I said, there's some things where I'm like, oh yeah, this kind of feels like a trope or, you know, it's
sure.
a classic.
All of their songs
are
tropes.
But I don't listen to any of the other songs.
Oh, man,
so like, it's
wild.
Not tired to me cause it's not anything I've ever listened to really.
The guitars on this album are good.
And the gang vocals
fine.
Are good or like the harmonizing
yeah.
is good.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there's a solo in every song and most of them are okay, but they're like 15 seconds, which is probably all you need. I don't know. I just was like, this is just a good album.
My problem is that it's incredibly formulaic, which is
yes.
not always a bad thing. You know, sometimes
I don't mind
because
it's
got,
like, what, 26 minutes? Like, this is not a long album.
It's 33 minutes.
It's 33,
long.
Yeah,
it's
not long.
It's not super long. It's just song goes for about half of it, and then you get a guitar solo for, like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you get the second
then you get
half
another
of the
chorus.
Song.
Yeah.
Like, it's that can work, and it really does on a lot of the tracks. It just gets kind of boring for me, especially because, like, the solos are good, but they're not, like... I don't know, amazing or anything.
They're technically proficient, but
they're
not
technically proficient. That's
yeah.
that's a good way to put it. But for me, this album is just like very middle of the road. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
I don't hate it. But I won't put it on a list of my favorite albums.
No,
I think it's pretty good though.
Should we listen to it one more?
Why don't
time?
We? It's real short.
Don't let him go.
No, it's don't bring me down.
Oh, right. Absolute banger start the album.
Yeah.
I like this song.
The lyrics are super cheesy. I love where they're just talking about like some smooth Chad and then telling the ladies not to let him go at the end. So, I like the guitar licks.
Yeah, the song is about a guy who's smooth, but then he's also like, and then there's another guy, and he's like kind of like average.
Oh, okay.
And that's the guy you don't want to let go. So the ladies are looking at this smooth guy, but you've got a guy that's okay. Don't let that guy go. He's okay. He's all right.
I actually really love the bass line. I thought it was super good, kind of funky. Sure.
Yeah.
It has a jungly beat, and I don't mean the EDM. It just feels like it's in the jungle.
Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, the guitar feedback that they play with is fun. It somehow doesn't feel awful or sound awful. And the keyboard is dangerously funky.
Sure.
Ooh, it is dangerously funky.
Yeah.
The way the verses kind of crash into the other verses and the chorus is just...
What I thought Bell would hate about this song is that it repeats "Don't Let Him Go" like a billion times at the end of the song.
Totally.
Yeah, it borders on cheesy, but I feel like it doesn't go into too dangerously cheesy.
I think it's like, Bell, I think it's incredibly cheesy.
No, not too bad.
Bell, I got great news for you. In 1981, this song went to number 24 on the Hot 100.
Okay, I don't get anything from that, but
other people really enjoyed this song. Yeah. It takes a lot of listening to get to number 24.
You can't
24.
Listen to the synth at 140, the little solo, and go, damn.
Like, yeah, fine.
There's a sweet solo, then there's a guitar solo right after it. I'm like, okay, this is good.
Some of the songs on this album are like 10 out of 10. They're really, really good. But then you get a bunch of others that are like 5s to 7s.
Yeah, but not the next song. Keep on loving you.
It's good. It's got a nice little guitar solo halfway through again. It's very cheesy.
Could have seen by the look in your eyes there was something missing.
Yeah, it's a slow burn to start the album or the song. And it sounds like a bad thing, but I think it adds to it because it really builds up to the crescendo.
Yeah.
And when it finally releases with the "Keep on Loving You," I was like, oh, yeah. This is rock.
This is one of the first power ballads. If you ever watch a late night infomercial about 80s music, this song is in that commercial. It is great. It is, I believe, on the Vice City soundtrack. Do not quote me on that.
You've said it twice. You're being quoted on it for sure.
I had to look it up, but they took off the music section on the Wikipedia page. Now I'm having to do more research.
Yeah, it takes a minute and a half before it gets to the chorus.
Yeah.
And when it finally gets there, it's like 1,000% worth the wait. And though it's cheesy, like the lyrics, the song is about him wanting to stay with his wife even though she cheated on him.
Yeah.
That it didn't work out. Spoiler alert. I did look it up. They ended up not being together.
Well, then. You know, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about the solo at a minute 50. Like, I don't think it works great because they go back to building up. Like, it's building up, like it's going to crescendo, and there's a solo, and then it goes back to a verse to keep building. I was like, oh, the solo probably should have bled into, like, the chorus.
Yeah, into the chorus,
It just kind of feels like a weird placement. But And then the only bad thing is that you only get the chorus twice.
Yeah,
sure.
The keep on loving you part is great.
Yeah,
they're not going to keep on loving you for too long, though.
No.
They're like, okay, we got other songs to sing now. No.
The song has 313 million plays on Spotify.
Yeah.
And went to number one in March 1981. Hey. So basically, it's number one right now in 1981. Like this week in 1981.
Yeah, this album did great. It's huge for them.
So not right now.
Not right now.
It's not relevant to the Spotify numbers. I was like, it's the Spotify numbers put it at number one 40 years ago.
Okay, I think its numbers on Spotify are so high because it's featured on. If you look at the number of albums it's featured on and playlists it's featured on,
"Keep on Loving You" is like
it's featured on the Spotify 80s playlist. Yeah. It's featured on like all those Time
it's
Life
a classic song.
Yeah,
like that. They have a few like classic hits,
monster ballads.
Yeah,
remember all those monster ballads. Poison's on there.
I love
every
Poison.
Rose has its thorn.
Every rose. I've seen Poison live.
Really?
Oh yeah, I saw them in Cinderella
that
together.
Girl is poison.
No. Oh no, that's a different song. That's a different song. Follow My Heart. This one sucks.
I think it's funky and the drums are pretty good.
He just repeats. Should I follow my head or follow my heart too many times?
The chorus is really mad, really repetitive. It's too bad though because I do think that the rest of the song is pretty good. There's really good instrumentation.
Yeah.
There's a cool breakdown with a wicked solo about halfway through. It's very badass.
This one's kind of lame though. He has a dream that the girl is like indifferent to him, and then he's just like, wait, is she really indifferent to me? I don't know.
Yeah, the lyrics are so basic. It's like, okay, she's unapproachable, but do I shoot my shot? Like, that's 90% of the song.
Yeah.
The song desperately needs more lyrics. Yeah. Because 90% is literally just the words, should I follow my head or my heart?
Yeah, this one stinks.
This is a skip.
But I don't think so. Because the instrumentation and the singer really are both good. Really good.
They're really good.
And the solo at a minute 10, it feels a little early in the song, but it's a solid solo.
Yeah.
They
end with like a solo too. It like fades out with him soloing, and it's a pretty good solo. I wish it didn't fade. I wish it just.
Am I on the wrong podcast this week? Am I on the wrong? Like, should I just go back out and try again?
Like, Jamie, I am not going to be nearly as nice about a lot of the rest of these songs.
If this song was on the album, I would not care. But like, I'm not going. This is awful.
It starts. Weird. It starts with a few really good ones, weird. And then it's got, you know, Take It on the Run, and like, that's pretty much it. But I don't understand. I could pick
an album I'm really passionate about, and you guys would be like, "It's Toilet Water. It sucks."
It's Poopa Doo. I love that Streetlight Manifesto.
Maybe you should learn something about that.
Albums of all time.
I don't know what to learn.
Bad taste.
It is what it is.
In Your Letter is fun.
This song sucks. I hate it. Cut it from the album.
Yeah. You do have bad taste.
So bad.
I don't know.
The guitar solo halfway through is good.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
they play like weird doo-wop, and then it gets to be like calypso-y almost at some point.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, it just ends like another doo-wop song. This one I think is funny because of the backstory. So Neil,
I don't get that when you listen though. It's not funny.
Okay, if you do the little bit of research, I kind of like it. Neil Dowdy came home from tour and found that his wife had left him by leaving a letter on their kitchen table. Well, what it turned out was the guy that she left him for was the guy who sold them weed. And his remark was, man, I'm really going to miss that guy. And that was it. He didn't care that his wife left him. No. But she left a note on the kitchen table. It was like, I'm gone.
See you later.
Anyway, this song's... Whatever.
No, the song sucks.
Next song.
Take It on the Run.
Take It on the Run, so good.
This one's great.
Heard it from another that you were messing around. Great song.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I've heard it a million times. It's a good track. It's got a cool solo around the 2/3 mark.
They say you got a boyfriend, you're out every weekend.
Yeah, is this written by the same guy who wrote Keep on Loving You?
Yeah.
Or did they just multiple guys in the band get cheated on by their women?
I don't know, actually. I never checked the writing credits.
I don't know what Take It on the Run means, but this song is good.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't called it out yet, but the singer's vocals paired with the almost choral effect of the backup singers is so good.
Yeah.
And I did not get tired of any of the harmonies, which made me listen to this song multiple times.
It's good.
And then there's a fire instrumental break in solo from 205 to 255.
Oh, yeah, it's so good.
And the instrumental is good enough that it takes the song to a whole other level and saves it from being just a cheesy love song.
Yeah.
I was like, my God, this solo rocks.
Take it on the Run used to be like everywhere.
You take it on the run, baby. It's so good.
People get drunk and sing it in bars and stuff. Like, it's huge song.
Ah, that solo. I'm listening to it right now.
Right?
So good.
Wouldn't this be fantastic, especially because it's so simple with the chorus and everything? It's so good to get drunk at a bar and this song is somewhat
relatable, but like it kind of hooks you in at the beginning. Like when he's talking about it, like you heard it from a friend who heard from a friend who heard it from some other guy. That part hooked me in.
So good.
And the rest of the song is good too. It turns out people really liked it too. It went to number 5 in the US, number 1 in Canada.
Yeah.
Which is where we live. And on the first day of MTV, August 1st, 1981, the song was the 9th song played.
Good job, MTV.
Yeah, good job, MTV. You started off with a banger. And then we get into the Tough Guys, which is the beginning.
What's the sample at the start?
It's like Little Rascals from Little Rascals or something. Rascals. Yeah. I thought the sample was way too quiet, and then it was just like hard cut, and then the track starts. So I didn't really like it.
Oh, interesting. It sounds much louder on...
Oh, really?
On the album.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it was just a recording to listen to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't like... I like when samples, especially in like hip-hop, when they use it and the beat comes in and the fade together.
If it's integrated. This is just like a random couple quotes. And then the song is like...
cut. Song starts.
Yeah, the song... The guitars are a jump scare. Yeah.
Honestly. And then it's like... just a classic rock song.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't do anything special.
It just is
a classic song.
I wrote that it adds nothing but pretext for something that doesn't need pretext.
No. The song is 3 minutes and 45 seconds, but it doesn't feel too long, which is surprising. Like it's a touch repetitive, but it barely stays on the enjoyable side.
Yeah. The rest of the song is kind of whatever.
It's got some screaming guitars. It's okay.
Yeah, sure.
But the jump scare doesn't do anything for me. No. I like it though. It's fine.
Other than scare me.
Yeah.
Out of Season.
It is unremarkable.
I think it's got a good chorus. I'm not crazy about it. I like the keyboard about halfway through and then the guitar solo. And this is where I was really like, oh, yeah, they're pretty formulaic. But, like, they know how to do it. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, this one feels a bit cheesy. I wrote down that it reminds me of Ninja Sex Party, which is like a modern 80s rock band. And I was like, I guess so. I bet they love REO Speedwagon. It's very, very...
bad.
It's of the time. It's something. It's really something. But yeah. I thought this was fine. It's got tight poppy hooks, high vocals, and some solos. It just feels like it's lacking some substance.
Sure.
Yeah. It almost feels like it's the third to last song on the B-side of an album that had all of its hits on the first side. Because it is. And then we get into Shaking It Loose.
Short and sweet.
Great guitars.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. The lyrics aren't great. Sounds like he's just talking about jerking off. Is that what he's talking about?
No, it's about dancing.
Definitely sounds like he's talking about jerking off sometimes, because it's like they knock on the door, but I'm not there and the lights are out or something. I don't know. It sounds like he's hiding in his room and he's jerking off.
No. Or he's just out of the club dancing.
Maybe he is.
That,
I don't know.
That or it's like one of those ones where, like, you know, like you keep it knocking, but you can't come in kind of song. You know, like.
Yeah. Like maybe.
I don't know. I have the same notes as Out of the Season. It's a fun song that doesn't have any lasting power.
It's real short. It's like 2 minutes.
Good.
It's like 2 minutes, 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Then we get in Somewhere Tonight, sung by Bruce Hall. It's the only one that isn't sung by Kevin Cronin.
I wrote it's okay, better than some of the previous songs.
Pretty much me too. The harmonizing is a lot of fun. The beat feels dynamic, which kept my head bobbing. It's funny because I liked the beat enough that I was kind of bummed out when it ended at 2:40.
Sure.
But otherwise, it's like, it's kind of just like whatever.
Yeah.
I think this one is a sort of like a hidden gem on the record.
Really?
Just because it's different, because Kevin Cronin's voice is sort of unique. And okay. Bruce Hall's voice is a little bit different. It's more hard rocky.
Yeah.
And then this song is a little bit more hard rocky than it is anything else. I like the little guitar riff on this song. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fine.
It's fine.
You can tell it's not written by the guy who writes all the other songs.
It is better than some of the previous songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
I wish you were here. It stinks.
I wish you were there.
I wish you were there.
Yeah, Wish You Were Here is Pink Floyd.
Yes, yeah. It is specifically not I Wish You Were Here.
This is a classic rock ballad, let me tell you.
Yes, it is.
It's got the classic trope where the final chorus or verse is sung way louder and more powerful. It's cheesy, again, not bad. And I feel it's a solid end to this album because it's like, what else would it be?
It's a good ending. Yeah,
it's very
of it. It's a classic rock ballad.
I'm not crazy about it. I think it's fine. Sometimes I can't tell if they're like actually trying to rip off Wish You Were Here. Some of it sounds almost like Shine On You Crazy Diamond during like the middle of the song.
Jeez, I didn't pull that out of my head.
No?
No.
Oh, I can totally hear it. It's weird. I don't know. It's fine. I don't think it's the best ballad. I would much rather listen to someone who like I don't know, glam metal or something like that if I want to listen to power ballads. I don't want to listen to this.
This album is, it's fine. Ploof, you're okay on it. Bell, he's more warm than all of us.
Sure.
He chuckles warmly.
Talk about the record itself.
Let's talk about the record itself. My copy is, I would say, basically in mint condition. It is an original pressing.
Nice.
This album can be had for as low as... I think I saw it at a local record store for like $5.
Yeah, I can imagine. They probably sold
so
a
they,
ton of
they
them.
Sold 11 million copies, and 6 million of them were sold in between November 1980 when it was released and the end of the year in 1981. So, and then the rest of them have been sold since then. But the cover is fairly simplistic. You're in someone's darkened apartment.
With the most 80s fonts they chose.
Oh, yeah.
Three crazy 80s fonts. And I guess Arial is the fourth one, but it's just like, wow.
Yeah, sort of. There's a serif and a sans serif font in there. So high infidelity is in both Times New Roman and Arial in white and pink font.
Hi-fi.
REO Speedwagon is in a salmon color, I think.
The hi-fi is in like a comedy movie font from that time.
Oh, for sure. The husband in this photo is putting a record on while his wife is getting ready to go out.
I was not expecting it to be his wife. I figured it was a prostitute.
I thought it was like a business trip, and it's like, just a mistress.
I honestly didn't.
I got the impression it was his wife is going out to cheat on him, but maybe he's cheating on his wife. Who knows?
I didn't spy that it was a record player the first time I was looking at it.
Was it Pizza Bugs?
I actually thought he was like bending over a desk to like do a line of coke or something.
Oh, see, I thought he was grabbing a suitcase or a briefcase. Oh, yeah. That's why I was like, he's gone
putting
to see
an
somebody.
LP on.
Yeah.
And then we flip it
over.
It's
a very dark cover. That's why we were kind of all done with
it. Flip it over.
There's
the
record
player.
Yeah, there
it
is.
Wow.
And then the record player is on a background that's like weird space lines and stuff.
Yeah, it's like Tron almost.
And then you get the track list. And then what else we got? You get the producer credits where it's... what we got here? We got some thanks... And then who was recorded by and stuff like this. And then the rest of it, there's nothing on the inside. It's not
even a record.
There's a record on the inside. I have it in its original paper sleeve. The paper sleeve has, like, it's basically turned to dust.
Yeah, nice and yellow.
Nice and yellow. And then the record is just your plain old black. It's on an Epic record because this is a Canadian pressing. Now this is epic. I do like the Epic Records logo.
Sure.
It's the same on both sides. I'm not going to flip around.
Cool.
But the quality of the pressing is pretty good.
I'm not going to flip around this record. I like that. You took your stand there and you ended up flipping it after all that.
I did it because you razzed me.
It's just so funny.
It is in immaculate condition. And then anyway, because I paid for six albums, I got them for $21.
So divided by six.
So I paid like $2 for this album. And I think I got $2 worth of enjoyment out of it.
Can I have it?
No. I'll buy another one.
Yay.
$3 well spent.
Well, I'll go first because I'm most positive. This is a fun album. It feels a bit front heavy with some of the definite bangers right off the bat before slowing down a bit with more standard rock songs, but there wasn't any point where I felt like skipping songs, and I've listened to the album a couple times since first listening to it, and I've enjoyed every listen.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if there's much I'd change about the album, but it's also not music I really listen to, so it's good, but yeah. I'm going to put this in the 8th spot.
Wow!
Below Alchemy by Disclosure.
What?
And above Modern Sounds and Country and Western Music by Ray Charles. I will definitely be listening to this in the summer. It's a great driving album, with how short it is, it ends before getting stale and souring the entire thing. I was looking through the list, and I was like, there's a lot of great albums on this list. There's a lot of great albums on this list.
There sure are.
There's a lot that are just fine, though. We've listened to a lot of albums that are just fine. Or
you know, the 80-some-odd episodes of our podcast are littered with...
Well, my list is not... It's split up into two.
I know. But the whole podcast in total, we've listened to a lot of pretty all right albums.
I feel like what it is that this album really benefits from being short.
Sure.
By the time I'm done with the album, it's over. Whereas there's so many where it's like, okay, I'm kind of done with this album and there's still three more songs.
Yeah.
So it really benefits from that. And it might be something that changes after doing, coming up, I guess, in a few months, when we kind of reorganize or re-rate some albums.
Still
maybe
higher.
Maybe move, but...
still higher, though. Know. The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which is nearly five times its length.
That one's 11.
Oh, it's
11. That one's dropped a bit. That one's dropped a bit. That one might drop a little bit.
Yeah, because
that is a very long album.
That album's like almost 2 hours long.
That was like our second album we did, though, wasn't it?
That broke
it was like, oh, whatever.
It was way too long.
Yeah, but then you chose 3 Inches of Blood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but at least that was like 40 minutes.
You chose Everything Goes Numb by Street Life.
Oh, yeah. That's a great album.
No, still so bad. No, that's the third lowest.
That's a great album.
You might as well be walking on the sun here, buddy.
Hey, that was a great album, too. Sun.
All right, Ploof, what do you think?
You know, some of these songs are great. Like, we've got Take It on the Run, which is an absolute classic. We've got Keep on Loving You, great song. It's got some pretty cool, bold album art, which probably helps sell the record quite a bit. It's good old classic rock, but honestly, I think that almost all other classic rock bands from the time are better and have put out better albums, and so I'm giving it like a 6.5 out of 10. I think it is decent. I think the songs that stand out are like 9s or 10s, but there's like two or three of them out of all of the rest, and I don't know.
So what was Bell's rating again? I know you told us
it
was
number 8.
8th spot.
Yeah, 8th spot, but what was your overall rating?
He doesn't write stuff.
I never do that.
Oh, he never gave us his number? I thought he did.
He's never... What?
We've done like 80 episodes.
We've been doing this for a year and a half.
I do not listen to this podcast.
You don't listen to what we're talking about?
Are you not present when we're speaking?
I always think he's like, it's like an 8 out of 10 or something.
He never says that. He's never said that once.
No. We've literally done 85 episodes and you've never paid attention to what I said.
He's put it in a spot since the beginning.
Never noticed.
That is crazy.
You should feel insulted right now. He's not listening to you at all. It just goes in one ear and then out the other.
I'm not surprised.
Okay,
not
well,
surprised.
Yeah, Jamie, you go ahead and tell us what you think, at least. Rate it out of 13.
No, I used to go back to what I rated albums about before. It's Three Bicycles out of
He's a very gentle man. It's like I told him. I went back and listened to the Leon LaHavis episode, which the editing is all over the place. I apologize, but Jamie's jokes are still here, which is I thought it was pretty good. Okay, see you next week. I'm like, you make that joke every episode. That was like our 10th episode, and you still make that joke.
Leon LaHavis was our 10th episode?
I don't know. It was a long time ago.
Crazy. This album is okay, but in proof reminding me that Take It On The Run is on this album.
Take It On The Run is so good.
Take It On The Run bumps it up another point.
I know. I that seems fair. It's like one of the best like 80s rock songs of all time.
Take It On The Run is so
take
good.
Take It On, baby. I don't know, dude. It's just so good.
It's just fun. Yeah
that's crazy. That's not even the best song on this album.
Oh, no. 100% wrong. It's so good. Take It On
that
The Run.
That intro just stinks.
Heard it from a friend. No, I love that.
It feels like a Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
What?
No, don't say that. I don't know. Christ, this is a real hard album to rate. I want to say that this album is pretty good, but not great. So I'm going to say that it's probably like an 8 out of 13.
That's what I was guessing you were going to rate it.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I don't hate this album. I just don't think it's any more remarkable than anything else that came out in 1981, despite the fact that it got a lot of radio play, and it was very popular amongst people probably younger than us.
Yeah. I'd just rather listen to other classic rock.
Sure.
That's pretty much it. Like, I'll if someone put this on, I'd never be opposed to it. I'd be like, yeah, sure, put that on.
But honestly, I never picked it because I didn't know what Bell would do, and I was curious. And I picked it, and he liked it. I don't know what to take from this. The podcast is a baffling experiment, friends. The baffling experiment is understanding what Bell likes about music. And I still don't know, because Empire of the Sun, which is, I don't know, two episodes ago now?
Yep.
I don't know. Anyway, is a good album for only the first like 4 or 5 songs. And then Bell is warm. Well, I know you like the other half.
I like the second half. But I do like,
I like the entire thing.
I like some of the
first
half,
which is confusing. I don't know. Anyway, what else have you guys been listening to now that we're done talking about this one? You guys been listening to anything else?
I've been listening
to...
I haven't purchased anything. I've been listening to a lot of Bad Brains.
Oh, some actual punk music.
Yeah, and I've been wanting to listen to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. It's a band I've always been intrigued by, but never really got into.
Is it from the East Coast?
I don't know. Yeah, my buddy Matt really likes
it. I've listened to some of it. Mentioned again, funnily enough, in the Leon LaHavis episode. I heard Nick Cave for the first time on the show later with Jules Holland, the music live show, and he was very good. And yet I've never listened to anything recorded before.
Yeah, he's got an interesting voice.
Yeah, he certainly does.
He looks like Trevor from GTA 5.
Does he?
He does look like... That's a good voice.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I bought some LPs.
What'd you buy?
So I was listening to Empire of the Sun, and I struck out trying to buy one of those because it's like $1 billion. And I was like, well, I got a hankering to buy some records. So I went on Amazon, and I was like, what are their deals of the day in vinyl? And I bought Melophobia, which is the Cage of the Elephant album with Cigarette Daydreams on it.
Oh, cool.
Great song.
Yeah, Come a Little Closer and Cigarette Daydreams, the big hit.
Also a great song.
And then I bought a Neil Young live album that I didn't know came out, because Neil Young just puts out albums like 4 or 5 times a year now.
Yep.
That one's kind of good. It's called Somewhere Under the Rainbow, November 5th, 1973.
Somewhere.
Over the Rainbow. Yeah, that one. And then I bought another one called Rubber Factory. That's a Black Keys album.
Before they got kind of commercial,
it's more like a bluesy album.
No, their first couple albums are really good.
Rubber Factory, Chulahoma,
Cosmic Egg, I think.
Mystic Egg. Yeah. Cosmic Egg. Yeah, it is you're right. Cosmic Egg. No, Cosmic Egg is a Wolf Mother.
Oh, that's Wolf Mother. You're right. Oh my God, I forgot about Wolf Mother.
We should do a Wolf Mother.
Joker and Thief in the Night.
Yeah, we brought them up before.
I don't own any Wolf Mother.
What episode did they get brought up in? Oh, it was the
It's been a long time
ago. Was it Royal Blood? No, maybe. something more recent.
Yeah.
Really? It was recent?
Yeah, because I was this reminds me of Wolf Mother? That kind of classic 2009 rock band.
Yeah. Wolf Mother's a great band. And then I bought another Neil Young album called Odeon Budokan. So one side is from the concert from the Hammersmith Odeon.
Yeah.
The other side is from the Budokan in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Which I believe, that's in Tokyo. And then I bought another one. What was the other one I bought? I don't remember. Oh, I bought Slayer's Rain and Blood.
Oh, really? You bought Rain and Blood?
Yeah.
You got it. You got to pick Rain and Blood at some point.
It's short album.
Yeah, it's not super long.
It's 31 minutes long.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see how Bell likes it.
Rain and Blood is such a good album.
It's a great song and a good album.
Yeah. Well, it's spelled differently. The album is Rain, like a king.
I know.
The song is Raining Blood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Raining Blood, great song. Guess what still hasn't shown up?
Disclosure.
Alchemy by Disclosure.
You should have paid more.
You should have paid $80.
6 to 8 weeks out, it says.
Ow.
6 to 8 weeks out. It's, it's the middle of March right now. What's the date today? The 7th?
It's like the 7th, yeah.
It's that episode is what? We recorded that in the early February. And it still hasn't shipped. I ordered it the day we recorded the podcast.
Should have ordered it 6 to 8 weeks ago. Let me tell you. Yeah. I'm actually going to see Disclosure live this summer, and I am very excited. They're going to be at a music festival I'm going to. Fingers crossed they don't cancel for whatever reason. I have not actually been listening to anything. I've been listening to like random songs. I went through my Shazam playlist, added it to my monthly playlist. Been listening to random songs from there, but I'm planning a trip to Japan, so I've been just like watching videos on Japan, doing everything Japan, which if you watch or listen to the Empire of the Sun episode from 2 weeks ago, I had Japan facts for that reason. But I've not been listening to music. No, like, albums, at least.
Listen to a bunch of city pop.
Cassiopeia.
Yeah.
I won't listen to Cassiopeia. I'll listen to Baby Metal, though.
Oh, Baby Metal's great, yeah. I keep forgetting they're from Japan.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
They're like a bunch of little Japanese girls.
Yeah, the lyrics being in Japanese probably should give it away.
Yeah, but anyone can sing in Japanese.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, in theory. Well, next week, it's Ploof's pick. What'd you choose, Ploof?
I am pretty torn, but I think I'm going to choose another album that is expensive that I own because you've chosen this.
You're always flexing your expensive records.
They're expensive because they're niche and limited run. That's the only reason they're expensive. This one also is a 1,000 copy run, I think. And it is You Come and Go Like a Pop Song by The Bicycle Thief.
Featuring Josh Klinghoffer.
That's right, because it's The Bicycle Thief is Bob Forrest, who he's like a really, really big part of the music scene back then.
He's doing all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
But he never, like, he put out this album and that was it, and it never got big.
They keep re-releasing this album.
Yes, but not on vinyl.
Yes, the first release is in 2020, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is the one you own.
Yeah,
I've never heard of this band, so it should be interesting.
Yeah, I'll be frank. I don't expect you guys to like it, but I love this album and I own a copy. So
I don't know. John Frusciante plays on it.
We're gonna listen to it. Does Frusciante play on it too, or just Josh?
He plays a solo on one of the songs.
Oh, sick! That's probably why I like it so much. At least part of it.
Yeah, I forget what song it is, but I think this is an album I own,
like on CD.
Yeah.
No way, really?
I think so.
Okay.
We'll find out next week on Vinyl Verdict. Goodbye.
Bye.